Friday 25th of December, Chris Davis, Rabbi Tzvi Belovsky, Jacob and Yosef, Simcha and the Pursuit of Orphan Cities.
Good morning. It's a privilege to be invited to speak again at this event, and it's so wonderful to see that the numbers keep growing. Great kudos to the organisers. Now, I'd like to look at an episode in Parshas Vayigash, which affords a significant psychological insight into the thinkings of the school of Reb Simcha Bunim of Pshischa. Reb Simcha Bunim, I'm sure you know, lived in Poland at the beginning of the 19th century, and his particular avodah, his contribution to the Hasidic world, was authenticity. The sense that many of the things that we do are perhaps driven by motivation other than the one they should be driven by. He means by this that our automatic responses, whether emotional responses or religious responses, are not automatically or certainly trustworthy. And because of that, we should be very cautious indeed about understanding and contextualizing our religious experiences. Now, this may sound like a mumbo-jumbo, but I hope with a bit of time to slot it all together. If one had to kind of put a name to this, it's the Im Ein Ani Mili. If I'm not myself, who is for me? Meaning that I have to express a certain authenticity and individuality in my avodah. We're not sheep. We don't simply do things because other people have done things, or even because we've been trained to think in a certain way. We do them because they're the right thing, and because there is some nitzchias in our avodah. This was a theory really developed by Reb Simcha Bunim, and something which expressed itself in different ways in the next generation with the Kotzke and the Ishbitza. The Kotzke, in terms of a lifestyle, espoused this kind of individuality and authenticity in the most extreme way, such that eventually, by the late 1830s, he became disappointed with the world and convinced that no one could really reach his standards, and withdrew and became a hermit for the remainder of his life. His chavrusa, friend, and eventually antagonist, the Ishbitza, developed it more as a kind of theory, a way of thinking, a way of contextualizing and understanding some of the key biblical narrative. Here we go. The episode I'm going to focus on is Yaakov's response to the discovery that Yosef is alive. All of the years have passed. He has believed, at least consciously, for all that time, that Yosef is dead, long gone. By Ya'alu Mitzrayim, and they arose, the brothers came back from Egypt. By Yavoi Eretz Canaan, and they came to Canaan. El Yaakov Avihem, to Yaakov their father. By Yahid Uloi Lemoir. And they reported him as follows. Oid Yosef Chai, v'chihu Moshel v'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. Yosef is yet alive, and astonishingly, he is the ruler of the whole land of Egypt. You would expect Yaakov to be jumping with excitement. Ayofog liboy. And his heart kind of skipped a beat. Ki lo ha'emin lohem. He didn't believe them. Vayidabru elav, and then they had another go. It could be this process takes place over several days, we don't know. Vayidabru elav, is kol divrei Yosef asher dibar lehem. And they spoke to him all the words of Yosef that he had spoke to them. And he saw the wagons that Yosef had sent to carry him. And the spirit of Yaakov, their father, came alive once more. There are many interpretations of the significance of the agolos. But having seen them, Yisrael, it's interesting, he's Yisrael now. It's quite important. Yaakov generally is the man functioning in his private capacity, whereas Yisroel is more functioning as the leader or the corporate identity of the Jewish people. Vayomer Yisroel, Rav oid Yosef ben Yichoy, it's too much for me that Yosef, my son, is still alive. Eilachov er'enu b'terem omus. I shall go and see him before I die. That's his response. It's very muted. It's a reticent and cautious response. And then the psukim continue. By Yisrael journeyed, and I'm going to paraphrase now, he took everything with him, and he came to Be'er Sheva. Be'er Sheva appears to be the last stop on the way out of Eretz Yisrael into the beginning of Golus. And he brings korbonos by his vats vochim lelokei oviv Yitzchok. And he brought korbonos to the God of his father Yitzchok. And then a Kodesh Baruch Hu appears to him in a nighttime dream. And the story continues. And eventually then we have the long list of all the numbers of those and names of those who go down to Egypt. And once the list is finished, the story picks up again. Yes, Yehuda shalach lefonav el Yosef. Yehuda he sent in front of him to Yosef. Chazal said, and it also appears in the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, that he sends Yehuda ahead to establish a base medrash, a base vav. Lahoyrois lefonav goshen. Chazal is obviously based on the word lahoyrois. And they came to Goshen. And then the final moment, the most moment of their meeting there, Yosef Merkaptoi, and Yosef prepared his chariot, Vayali Kos Yisrael, Viv Goshno, Vayiroi Lov. He appeared to him, Vayipol Al Tzavarov. He fell upon his neck, Vayip Al Tzavarov Oid, and he cried upon his neck further. Yosef is active, whereas Yaakov appears to be entirely passive. And finally, the last passage I want to look at, Vayomi Yisrael Yosef Omusa Poam. Yisrael said to Yosef, hard to translate, but according to Rashi, Omusa Poam means, kind of now I could die. Acharei Ro'osies Ponecho, since I have seen your face, Yodachochoi, that you're yet alive. That is the record of Yaakov's response to hearing that Yosef is alive and to their meeting. And this is the episode that the Ishbitzer uses as a springboard for understanding self-motivation, particularly in the Inyan of Simcha. And he bases his remarks on the Gemara in the first parak of Brochus. Gemara in Daf Hei Omud Aleph in Brochus quotes a pasuk in Tehillim in Perek Dalet, Rigzu b'al techto, tremble and do not sin, Imru b'lvavchem, say in your heart, means reflect Al mishkalchem, upon your beds, meaning lie awake at night, considering and contemplating this matter, v'doimu selah, and remain silent. That's the posuk. And the posuk that the Gemara uses, so if you lay the barcham in the name of Shimon bin Lochish, la'olam yargiz odam yetzer toiv al yetzer ra, a person should always allow the Yetzer Tov to prevail, to kind of, in some way, make it tremble in a way that it's successful, to prevail over the Yetzer Ra. Shenema, rigs will be al techto. And if it's successful, I'll paraphrase the word, that works fine. Dim lavan, if not, Yaseh batoro learn Torah, Shenema, imru gulbabchem. And if that's successful, say Kriya Shema, al mishkabchem. What do you do in your bed? Kriya Shema, that's how the Gemara interprets the Pasuk. And finally, if that's not successful, one should conjure up an image of the day of one's death, Shinema, but doimu sela, be silent. That's the process that the Gemara recommends based on this Pasuk of ensuring that one does the right thing, thinks the right way, and when there is a competition between the Yetzer Ra and Yetzer Tov, how to overcome it. That's how the Gemara is. And now, in the Me'ah Shaloyach of the Ishbitzer, and in the writings of the Beit Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov Lena, who was the Rebbe in Ishbitzer, Rav Zim, following him, they consider this pasuk to be an opportunity to explore the parameters of self-awareness. This self-awareness stuff, we seem to think it's very modern, even post-modern. We have to be always aware of what we're doing, of how we're thinking, and so on. But actually, the Ishbitzer certainly will have written this before 1850, and possibly considerably before 1850. He says as follows. He quotes on his, he quotes the Gemara, and then he begins. When the Gemara says, La'olam, it begins an observation, an exhortation, La'olam Yarug is oil on person. A person should odom. A person should always ensure that the Yetzer Tov is able to prevail over the Yetzer Ra. This is not some kind of occasional principle. First rule is la oilom means this is a constant. This is how things always have to be, and the way interpreted ha'in b'chol ha'inyonim, always in all matters. Shi'avru al odom, whatever comes upon a person. And even when it comes to very great and exalted matters, and this perhaps is the key line of the entire essay, one should constantly be aware and consider and evaluate and consider. And what he calls ulavare bibirurin, which means to go through a process, it literally means of clarification, that it means a process of self-analysis, to be certain that when one responds, and when one acts, particularly in response to some kind of remarkable or exciting occasion, that that response is genuine, and is the rots that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, rather than some kind of other. And he'll discuss what he means by other motivation, midova acher, something else altogether. He said, and only when one has been through a process of consideration and evaluation, is it legitimate to experience that feeling. It's remarkable that although this is early 19th century Polish Hasidus, it's remarkable how similar in some ways this is to the late 19th century Litvish Musa. The idea that everything's got to be evaluated, you've got to be certain about your motivation. Remarkable coincidences, perhaps for another time. How do you do this? But he says, before he explains what to do, particularly when it comes to simcha, particularly in the inyonim of simcha, this requires particular care and attention, because it's so easy when one is happy simply to experience the happiness as a temporal rather than permanent thing. And his understanding, and this is not at all unique to him, is that every episode, every event that's recorded, particularly in Bereshis, it's not just the story of someone's life, the details of an inspirational or remarkable life, but it's particularly to teach us in Yonim Nitzchim. It has to be things that are permanent. And if Yaakov is recorded as behaving in a certain way, it is understood this will be an eternal lesson for all of history. And it's almost as though these rebbes ascribe to the others the awareness that that's going to be the case, and therefore extreme caution pervades their motivation and their actions and even thoughts, because every detail will inform the behavior and aspirations of Klal Yisrael throughout the generations. So he says, therefore, there are four stages which are described in this Gemara in the first parak of Brachos. There are four stages. Four stages of scrutiny and of what he's going to do. Having told you how he interprets the Gemara, he's then going to transpose that interpretation into the story of Yaakov to see what he's doing. Just saying you can see that this is really what Yaakov's doing. What are the four stages? So the first thing is he has to reinterpret what it means. If it's successful, mutar v'im lav, that phrase that appears in the Gemara, if it's successful this stage, that's fine, and if not, we understood the Gemara to mean that if you succeed in making the Yetzer Tov prevail over the Yetzer Ra, then you can stop, you don't need to do any more. And if not, then you need to go further and deeper. The way the Ishbitza understands the Gemara is saying that if you succeed in recognizing the imperfection, if you like, the non-altruistic motivation, then it's fine. You've succeeded and you won't need to do it anymore. But if you have not yet dug out the selfish motivation in your action, then you need to go further and deeper. It's a completely revisionist understanding of the Gemara. If it's successful in helping you to gain an adequate degree of self-awareness, then Matova Monayim, and if not, you need to go deeper and deeper and deeper. How so? There are four levels. Can't read it all, we have limited time, but I will paraphrase it. He says, what's the goal? Eitas lo odom eich lehavchin, ulovoi el oimek ho emes. The objective is to come to the authentic, profound truth. And when that has been completed, if you still want to do it, then it's kosher. How? Okay. So the first is that when some desire or interest, the first is a person should, as he says, Yargiz Odom Yetzer Toiv Al Yetzer Ra. I know what that means. But one should try to categorize this desire, this interest. If you have a desire, what's the source of the desire? Recognize that every desire, every physical pleasure, every experience is temporary. Think about it. Does it matter that it's not permanent? Will it still be important tomorrow? Will people still remember it? Will it have any impact on the world in a year's time or in 20 years' time? If it doesn't, if it won't, then it has no nitzchias. And he suggests you should abandon it. He says, we live only 70 years, and even good things don't last. And then he says it. And if you're successful in realizing the selfish or personal motivation, that's fine. Because you won't want to do it anymore and the matter will be dropped. And if you don't, and you still feel that you want to go ahead and articulate or express this feeling, then go on to the next stage. What's the next stage in the Gemara? It was Yasub HaTorah. Learn Torah. So what's learning Torah? So he says, and he gives what I think in many ways the most beautiful beautiful idea that he expresses in the essay. Because he says, what is Borah, the Gemara in Kedushin? Borasi Yetzorah. Borasi Loi Torah Tavlin. So we understand it to mean that if a person has Yetzorah, then he can divert himself with the Kedusha of Torah, and hopefully he'll immerse himself in his learning, and by then he'll have diverted himself. He said, that's not how it works. And maybe the psychologists in the audience will agree with this observation. But he says, the truth is, if we're blunt and honest, no matter how much we are aware of Isurim, when we have a strong desire to do something, that desire will overpower the intellectual awareness that something's forbidden. And that will not work. It just won't work. Knowing that something's forbidden, even with quite severe consequences, that simply doesn't work. When the desire is upon us, the desire will prevail. So what's the solution? He says, Borasi Yetzorah, Borasi La Torah Tavlin means a recognition that you can have the same experience, but in a kosher way. That when that desire is strong, knowing that it's forbidden won't work. But internalizing the idea that I could still have the same experience and finding, if you like, the kosher Torah outlet, that will be successful. He said, that's the next stage. Of course, that's a shiur in itself. But that's the next stage. How so? Because when a person has this recognition that it's possible there is a Torah and kosher way to have to express this feeling, we hope, says the Ishbitz, he'll realize that he'll do it a different way. But if after that recognition he still wants to go on with it before, then he has to move on to the third stage. What was the third stage? Kriya Shema. What's Kriya Shema? So he has a very interesting explanation of Kriya Shema in this. He says, Kriya Shema is a recognition that the Torah's project creates a hierarchy. By which he means that there are those who can learn and those who cannot learn. There are those who can learn and have a very profound and deep understanding and connection with the ideas and relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. But not everyone can. Not everyone is capable of that. And Kriya Shema spells equality. And he quotes, as does his son, the Beis Yaakov, the Gemara at the end of Tanis, that the Mechol Tzadikim, La'osid Lomo, Kodesh Baruch Hu will stand in the middle. It's obviously an allegory. And the tzaddikim will dance around in a circle, the idea of the circle being this sense of unity, appreciation of the future, about Kodesh Baruch Hu will be one. What does one mean? It means equidistant from everyone, equally appreciated. Am I using the Torah experience in the right way? Do I come out of the process of Torah understanding? Do I come out of that process feeling that each Jew has an equidistant relationship with God or not? That's how he explains it. I found this very difficult. He does go on to say, to explain in the story of Yaakov, that he sends Yehuda at this stage to set up a Beis Medrash. But I notice in the Beis Yaakov, for those who are not familiar with the Beis Yaakov, it's highly recommended, and very often he takes the ideas of his father and expands them. So he talks about that Yaakov goes to Be'er Sheva. We'll come back to this in a minute. Yaakov goes to Be'er Sheva. Be'er Sheva is the place where Jewish identity is asserted. It's the place where the others make brisos with Avimelech, where they establish these are our rules, these are your rules, this is who we are, this is etc, etc. Now, there isn't time to expand further on the Kriyas Shema idea, but in brief he says that it's possible, Yocha Odom al Leidid Divrei Torah, a person comes to Divrei Kambodi Laharim, always the Nafshoi, and he becomes slightly haughty. And then he becomes incapable of birurim, of properly assessing whether his motivation is true. And therefore, if he goes through, he says Kriyas Shema and connects with this idea in the appropriate way, then he's fine. But if that doesn't work and he still feels motivated, the final thing is Yitzkolod Yom HaMisa. He should conjure up the day of his death. This seems to me something very similar to the first one. But he understands. But what is happening is that a person at the last stage should think, imagine, chas v'shalom, rachmana litzlam, I'm going to die in 5 minutes. Will this still be the list of important things that I wish to do? We've all read these inspirational stories about a person who gets a call from a doctor, Lo Aleinu, to tell him that he has a very, very short time to live, and he goes off to shul, and he says, Ashrei v'mincha, like it's ne'ila. And then after he's finished mincha, he gets the phone call and says, terribly sorry, we've confused your records with someone else, and you're perfectly fine. Unfortunately, the other guy didn't get to hear about it. But how we feel about when we know we only have a short time to live, he says, the last stage, Yom HaMisa means, it's about to happen right now, what are my priorities? And if this still remains on the list of priorities, then, having been through that process, it's kosher. It's kosher. It's very psychological. But the most fascinating thing is, in the remaining times what we're going to do, is to plug that back in to what Yaakov is doing. And this really, of course, the Ishbet is extracting it from the story of Yaakov and his response, or apparent lack of response, to the evidence that Yosef is still alive. So let's think about what he does. First of all, he says, Elchove Erel B'Ter Almus, I shall go, and I shall see him before I die. He says, this is stage one. Stage one is a realization, it's only going to be temporary. I'm going to die, I'm an old man, is it still important? That's stage one. Stage two is, he should occupy himself in Torah. Next stage two, he sends Yehuda to prepare Torah. And also the idea, as I said, he goes to Be'er Sheva on his way out. The third stage is, what do Chazal say? How do they interpret the fact that Yaakov appears not to hug Yosef or respond at all? Yaakov appears passive, but he's saying Kriyas Shema. It does seem rather odd, and I'm sure we've all thought this, what, just now you say Kriyas Shema? It's conceptual. He's going through a process of consideration. He is so in control that he is, as it were, saying Kriyas Shema. That means, according to, and of course, it seems to me that the Ishbitz has created the whole piece round that idea. But at this point, Yaakov is going through a process of understanding, is this genuine? Is this genuine? He's asking this himself over and over again. Is it just happens of seeing my son? Is it just that I feel now I'm a complete parent? That I haven't failed? All of these things are reasonable, but none of you Yaakov Avinu. And finally, what does he say? Amusrapam. Which really means, correctly interpreted, I could die even right now, right at this moment, right now, since I've seen that you're alive. Which the Ishbitzer understands to mean, he now evaluates whether if this was the last thing he did in this world, it will be, and then he feels it's legitimate. And he comes out with this sense of authenticity and legitimacy. Beis Yaakov has a very interesting spin on this last part. He notices the change in Loshen, which I'm sure you've noticed as well. He says in the first time round, Elchov Erev Terem Omus, lest I die, or before I die. And in the second, his last line is, Al-Musa'ab-Ham, slightly different phraseology, and he says the reason it's written like this is because the first time he's saying, I need to gain an awareness that this is a temporary experience, and I've got to contextualize my response. But the final end, I just say, you've just done Kriya Shema, you just connect to our Kodesh Baruch in the most profound way, and yet he still feels this sense of connection, of awareness, of a desire to articulate the Simcha. If that's the case, then he's saying, it's not that I'm going to go in case I die. I really could die right now. The experience is over. I have reached, if you like, the pinnacle of my spiritual moment, because not only have I seen my son alive, but I'd be capable of recognizing that my motivations are authentic, and therefore, if you like, as he puts it, Olam Hazeh merges into Olam Haba in the most profound way. If I may add my own spin to this, you may have noticed that the Pasuk says, before the genealogy, it says, Vayizbach Zavochim Leilokei Oviv Yitzchok. He brought Korbonus to the God of Yitzchok, his father. Now, why did he see him? This means that Yaakov sees HaKadosh Baruch at this moment through the lens of Yitzchok, his father. It means he understands him in somehow in a Yitzchok-dick fashion. Yitzchok is a man whom Olam Habo and Olam Hazeh are the same. He sees no distinction. He lives in a world of pure Gvura, where the challenge of the Akedah is primarily for Avraham and not for Yitzchok. Because he lives in a world where there is no distinction, there are no veils. What you see is what you get, and that plays out all the way through his life. Yaakov is attempting to see the world and to rate our Kodesh Baruch with this very difficult process of self-examination through the eyes of Yitzchok, his father. And therefore, Vayizvach Zvachim Leilokei Oviv Yitzchok. It has to be through the eyes of Yitzchok, his father, not Avram, not his own eyes. I need the Yitzchok lens to evaluate whether what I'm experiencing is authentic. To finish, we said, the Ishvitz began his essay, La'olom means, this is the Cholein Yomim. This is a general principle. No one reasonably expects that before expressing any emotion, or articulating any feeling, or engaging in any religious process, we can reasonably always go through something as sophisticated and complex and self-aware as this. But I found it refreshing and fascinating that if one looks in the right kind of writings, that the modern notion of self-awareness, trying to examine one's own motivation, appreciation that there is a complex mix with all of us of altruistic motivation, of selfish motivation, and at least acknowledging that we and our role models, the others, are going through or should be going through a process of this sort, we hope is a valuable lesson, something inspirational for us. Thank you, Gash. Good Shabbos.